everyone. Another brand new episode of Retro Asylum. We've got a special here. We have a guest, Mike Diver. Mike, do you want to introduce yourself and what do you do?
What do I do? Hello. Yeah. So I'm Mike. Outside of my day job, which is not why I'm here, I have been known for writing books. And one of those books is being published this August 2026. It is called Aliens, the Video Games. And spoiler, it's about alien video games. So that's what we're going to dig into. And I'm very excited to talk about it because it's been a real passion project of mine. It's been a lot of fun to make, to research, to put together, speaking to many devs. It's my sixth book, but absolutely the most fun one so far from the author's side anyway. I mean, hopefully people read it and think it's fun as well, but my job is done.
Yeah, we've had a bit of a sneak preview here at Retro Asylum Towers, and a few hosts have had a little bit of a read, and it's quite an exceptional book, very well put together.
God bless you.
And one of the extraordinary things about it is, and we're going to delve into this later, but how phenomenally comprehensive it is. Because I went in there thinking, I bet they haven't done this one. I bet Mike didn't do this. He did. Totally did. Right.
When it comes to official games, licensed games, they're yeah. all there, including all there. The AVP ones. Yeah, yeah, everyone in detail. Yeah.
It's all there.
Spoilers, there are definitely a couple of games that I became aware of, or certainly more aware of, post wrapping this. So if you're looking for Cosmic Hard Bowl or the Atari ST freeware shared aliens strategy game, those are not in here. Sorry.
No.
And if that puts someone off from buying it, yeah. I'm really sorry.
I'm
just getting out there now. Yeah.
There are limits.
Cosmic Hard Bowl though. Wow. What a game that could have been.
As you said, this is not your first rodeo, as our American friends like to say.
No,
you've been writing for all sorts of people, Vice, Edge, Guardian, Nintendo Life, and Official PlayStation Magazine. And you've also, your first book apparently is the Indie Games, the Complete Introduction to Indie Gaming, which is an ever-moving beast.
It
so
is.
That's quite a brave thing to write.
Well, at the time, that came out in 2016, and it was quite a speedy project, and we were coming up to, No Man's Sky was going to be a big thing. It was kind of before Minecraft became huge, and it was still technically an indie, so we had that in our sort of wind in our sails. But I do look at that book now, and if anyone looks it up on the internet and such, you'll see that the games in it are obviously very, very 2015, 2016 era. And so it feels rather out of date, but still got some good dev stories in there, some behind the scenes stuff, quite a lot on No Man's Sky, quite a lot on Faster Than Light. I remember doing a lot on that. Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, stuff in that. So yeah, it was a really good experience, that one. And obviously set me on my way, because like I said, Aliens is my sixth book.
Yeah,
so,
sixth book.
They've been going
one
on
called The Console, 50 Years of Video Gaming.
Yeah, the console came out in 2024. The idea there was, so in 2019, I did a book or published a book that was like a little retro gaming book. It's kind of, I always refer to it as my toilet book, because it's the kind of one you can sit down for 5 minutes with, pick
on
up
the
read,
throne.
Bit, do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's that sort of thing. You're not going to hold on to it for a long time. But it was a fun little project to do. And off the back of that, I was like, well, obviously there's loads more I could write and go into around the development of home consoles specifically. I've always been a console person, less a computer person, even though the first thing I ever played video games on or computer games on was a ZX Spectrum, and then we went Amiga, but I wanted Sega. I got Sega. Sega was my thing. So I really wanted to expand that out, and so I did. And the console is by far my longest book in terms of word count, and it starts with the Odyssey, of course, coming out in 72, and the kind of story behind that, which goes back to the 60s and touches upon earlier quote unquote computer games from before then, and goes right the way through to your Series XX, your PS5, and kind of ends quite neatly from 72 to 2022 with the Evercade VS, which I'm pretty sure came out that year. And it kind of made a nice sort of circle, really, because then you've got this brand new thing. But it's, I don't think you would say that the Evercade, well, the Evercade is primarily a retro system. I know it has modern games on it as well, but like modern retro styled games, right? But it just felt like a nice kind of full circle to finish on that. So that was good. You know, still very available. If anyone's interested in 50 years of home console history, give it a look. Well, people generally liked it.
Considering our audience, oh yes, most definitely. They are huge fans of this kind of. We have many a discussion about consoles on our Discord, our wonderful Discord community. Personally, my first console that I actually played a game on, I think, was the Odyssey 2. Fairly certain it was the Odyssey 2, the G7000, as it was known in Europe. I was an Intellivision kid, not an Atari kid. So I think I struck gold on that one, but others disagree. But I thought D&D or Dungeons and Dragons on that game, on that system, way ahead of its time.
I think you can say, you know, if you've got the Intellivision, you've got the depth of game rather than the breadth of game, which maybe you had on the Atari. You know, you had more games to pick from on that VCS, but were they all of a quality? Well, no, famously not.
No. And thankfully, there are Intellivision collections on the Evercade, which is a lovely addition. I didn't think they were going to delve into that, but they did.
Yeah, two volumes, I think, wouldn't it?
Good on them. Also got ColecoVision and stuff like that. I didn't have one, but a friend of mine had one. So I was exposed to the second generation quite well. I was in a rare place to be, to have the main three, the ColecoVision, the Atari, and the, not, you know, exposed to being able to play them.
Yeah.
So that was from formative years for me. So that's certainly my earliest sort of memories of games, but I then drifted off to the computers like most people did. I didn't return to consoles until the Master System, because I got that one out and launch, because that was one of the earliest pay packets I bought.
Oh, amazing.
I bought Sega with Master System with Outrun and Choplifter.
Great choices.
Great. I'm so proud of those choices. Well done, 16-year-old Chris. Well done, mate. I've just got to say, one of the best versions of Choplifter to this day is on the Sega Master System. It's a phenomenal version.
I don't have a particularly expansive Master System collection. It's probably about 50 or 60 games. I'm trying to think how much space they take up on a shelf. But Choplifter is one of them, as is Outrun. I mean, you know, you've got to kind of have the cornerstones, right? But Master System was my first console as well. But I didn't get it until the Mega Drive was actually already out in the UK, because I was quite often that like one step behind. Just because, you know, what you could afford. And I bought it myself as well with my own money. So I had to like save up pocket money and stuff. So.
Yeah, I am slightly older. So that means that I got this, you know, I defected to the Atari ST in 87 as well and stuff like that. I left behind the 8-bits much earlier than most, which I still regret because I missed out a lot of things. But I always enjoy my time with the ST. So there you go.
I mean, the joy of this is that you can go back. I know prices don't get any cheaper, but you can go back. You won't struggle to pick up a NES if you still want to pick up a NES, you know, that sort of thing.
We're big fans of the Mister. They're amazing machines. If you know how to use them, know how to set them up, they can pretty much do anything up until the Saturn, I think, give or take. Add a push. But at the moment I'm playing through Loco Roco on my PSP, tried it on a PS5, but I just felt it looked better.
It's a game amazing. That's made for the system, really.
I
love that, you know, you've got these games on other things and you can play them and you can emulate them. And, you know, PlayStation is slowly doing a good job about bringing back earlier catalog things into the PS Plus setup, right, into their game catalog. But yeah, some things are just meant to be on certain platforms, I suppose,
and game,
that's definitely one of them.
It's full of joy. All it is joy. Yes, there's a lot of skill, there's a lot of, like, if you really, you could get really wound up about it, but it's just full of happiness and joy and music and singing and joy. And I just felt like, you know, playing through it. And I've got two PSPs. I've got the later Street one, and I've got the, you know, the earlier, the launch one, and still works.
Thousand series,
yeah.
Do you know what? my 1000 series, you know, first model, the battery has not blown up yet.
No.
I use it pretty sparingly, to be fair, but it's still going. You know what? Some of those older handhelds, I know PSP's got a bit of an issue with the battery, but my Game Boy SP, Advance SP, like that's, I swear I can charge that these days and it will last for about 6 months. Yeah. Like it's magic or something. I don't understand it. It's wizardry. Not so much my Switch, but certainly the SP. Yeah,
I did recently upgrade my Game Boy Color, my Game Boy Pocket. I upgraded it with the backlit screen. I'm not afraid to get a hold of a soldering iron. I'm good. I'm fine.
Asked a very nice man to do that to a Game Boy Color for me because I didn't trust myself. So it was around the time, you know, the analog pocket and stuff. And, you know, I kind of wanted one of those. And I looked at the price. And I was like, you know what? I can get like a modded Game Boy Color and play. Because I've got about 100 or so Game Boy carts. So I've got like a good collection to delve into and dive into. So I thought it's worth getting like a nice console to play it on, so that's what I did. And it's got all the little filters and stuff on it, so it's pretty cool, and it came in handy for this Aliens book as well. Like that was not a deliberate segue, but in the book there's a couple of Game Boy games and I've taken pictures of the carts themselves. Ooh. And they're both with my modded Game Boy Color. I didn't bother to get a DMG out. I just had the Game Boy Color there and I took the pictures next to those, which is probably I told you I didn't know my own book. The Alien 3 is actually with my old DMG, and then Thanatos Encounter is with my modded Game Boy Color. But
we're gonna delve into that. Now, I think we've got enough. I could talk about the analog 3D and how much fun I've been having with that, but no.
Oh, it looks great. Yeah. Another time. Yeah.
Another time, Mike, because we've got a book to talk about. We've got a book. So, just to be clear, and I'm going to repeat this several times, but the name is Aliens, the Video Games. It's by Mike Diver. And it's an extraordinary thing. Basically, actually, not for me describe it. You have a go, because I like doing this. Have a go at pitching what you did. What have you done?
I've put together a book that collects all of the Aliens, AVP official games since 82 on the Atari, although there are some entries from a little bit before then, like unofficial games that were sort of based on the first movie. And spoken to devs where I can, or like dredged the internet and looked at old magazines to find quotes and old interviews with other devs, or like, you know, scrambled around to find, you know, stuff that devs who worked on Japanese games that I couldn't reach for this book might have talked about, like the Capcom AVP, for instance, where I couldn't get hold of anyone. But thankfully, one of those devs did a really nice Twitter thread recently. Well, I say recently, like long enough ago that you can still, or more recently enough that you could still find it. So you could pull out stuff from that. So I was just reaching in and pulling out as much information as I could about these games to kind of present them in a way that Alien games haven't been presented before, because you can find your YouTube videos of someone playing like the best 10 Alien games, or you can read a list that someone like myself has written in the past, but like, here are the games you play for Alien Day, you know, it's Isolation this, and it's, you know, very rarely Colonial Marines that, but you know, you're kind of going into the older things, some things you can't play. I just wanted it all in one place, really. You know, Alien is a series, a brand, a franchise, a mood, an atmosphere, you know, the only thing to have ever given me nightmares. You know, it's been, I was gonna say it's been a part of my life for so long, or as long as I can remember, but that's like paraphrasing Ripley from the movies. It's been a big favorite series of mine up to a point. There are some movies that I don't particularly enjoy, but I like the world, I like the tech, and I like the look. And, you know, coming from a video games background, I thought, well, here's an opportunity. Other people like Alien, other people like games. You know, I've done a book before, I've proven that I can do it. I was originally thinking about just going down the avenue of like, let's do an Alien 3 feature, like pitch a feature out, because Alien, it was funny we're having this talk now, because Alien 3 has the assembly cut has just gone on HBO Max or something, and it's like the internet's a little bit like, you know, they're quite into that. Like, you know, some of us have watched that movie ages ago, like in the assembly cut, but it's only just come to streaming. So that's kind of back in the news cycle a little bit as well. But I was always a bit of an apologist for that movie even before the assembly cut. So the fact that it got four very different adaptations really intrigued me. And I wanted to speak to some of the devs behind it, which I have in the book. But you sort of look at that and go, there's more to this. Like I could expand this out. So I did. I wrote a plan, pitched it, and here we are. That sounds really easy. Like, pitching books is not easy. I have unsuccessfully pitched more than I've ever successfully pitched, put it that way. But this one was like, we'll have that straight away sort of thing. So happy days.
So I've always regarded the Alien franchise or the Alien world universe as the premise is this. It's an extension of our own reality. Only what if we took the late capitalist sort of ideal and then pushed it out into space with people crewing these ships, these spaceships, are not the astronauts we know. You know, very topical, we have the astronauts who went around the moon. All of them hyper-intelligent, hyper-professional, you know, beyond, you know, inspirational people, okay? Whereas in Alien, you had people bickering about share bonuses. I don't care about it. I don't want to talk about the bonus situation. I remember that scene. Most people don't. Most people are focused on the horror. But I think the bickering between the crew was fascinating.
I've always looked at it like in these films, you know, the company, quote unquote, they never send their best, do they? Right. Like, there's a reason for that. Like, we've just had Alien Earth, what was it, last year? And, you know, the way that the ship in that comes a cropper, you know, it's a series of supposedly competent people being incredibly incompetent, right? And a lot of the Alien films do play out that way. Like, you know, Covenant, Prometheus, there's a lot of smart people in those films doing really stupid things.
Yeah.
So, and you know, those I guess I can't give a pass to because they are meant to be smart. But yeah, Alien, you know, it's the space truckers movie, right? Those are not scientists, not really. You know, they are there. They're away for, you know, decades. That it's a long job. It's not fun. If the company actually sent its best on these things, how would it maintain its share price back home, sort of thing. So the corporate side of it. I mean, it that does come into the games. Of course it does. Like, we see it all the way through that there's these agendas. You know, if there's ever a company man in a game, I think of Infestation as a case in point, the really, really great DS game of 2011. And you meet this sniveling little rat bag and, you know full well that he's going to turn on you because he's the company man. And of course he does, because you've seen this all before. But, you know, I will say that sort of thing, the corporate side, obviously doesn't make for like fascinating gameplay most of the time. But, in terms of the movie world and expand that out into the novels and such, you know, it always comes down to like these people, this crew, this set of characters are for the most part expendable, right? You know, it's right there on the screen, you know, those Marines and aliens, you know, they don't know what they're getting into. The people who sent them there know what they're about to get into, you know.
Yeah. So that's the setup, everyone. We're now going to delve into the core. I've got several questions, quite a few questions, actually. Hopefully we get through them all. We may not. I don't know. See how this goes. And the first question I have then is, out of all the games that you featured in the book, I was very careful here because not all the games have been made. We've established that because there's a couple, tiny, tiny, tiny handful, if that. Which do you believe captures the atmosphere of the Alien films the best? Which may be a bit... You can have more than one, of course, because that would be wrong for me to say, oh, it's just this one. But, you know, I have an answer for this. But I want to know, Mike, you've been studying. You studied this. You researched this for maybe 18 months, 2 years, maybe longer. What was your takeaway thinking, this one really nailed the atmosphere and the concept and the hopelessness that is the
film. The hopelessness. Well, maybe the Game Boy Alien 3 nails the hopelessness of that movie. I'm not sure. Although it does end in a very happy way. It's quite notable in Alien 3 games that two of the three to feature Ripley do finish with her leaving the planet. They don't quite follow the narrative of the movie. But when it comes to like atmosphere, I mean, if you're looking at Alien 3, it's the SNES game, I think. That's got a great thick atmosphere of dread about it. It doesn't play a damn thing like the movie, but like really, really gets this fantastic atmosphere in its sound effect and visual design. For Aliens, it's Infestation, absolutely, a game that kind of picks up where Aliens left off. You know, it's kind of like an unofficial non-canon sequel to it that starts on the Sulaco and spreads out across other locations, but ultimately is more Marines facing off against corporate shadiness and various different xenomorphs, some of which are more creative than the ones we ever saw on screen. And of course for Alien, I mean, it's got to be the 1984 ZX Spectrum game, right? With the scary shot. I'm joking. It's Alien Isolation, isn't it? Obviously. Although the 1984 game is fantastic, and the first few times you ever hear if you play it on Spectrum, that is, you hear a vent opening and you're like, right, okay, so that wasn't me. So that means that something's here. You should look that one up on YouTube after you listen to this, listener. Isolation, like, I mean, I know this is Retro Asylum and that's not, well, I tell you, do you know what? It's starting to feel like an old game, 12 years old now. It's just about still playable on everything. Yeah. I mean, you can play it on a postage stamp near enough these days. I most recently played it on Switch couple of years ago, like when the writing for this book was kind of first starting. We had a holiday, and so I loaded it up onto my Switch and took it there. And I honestly would only play it in the daytime. I wouldn't play it with the lights off when it was dark, because that game has the ability to make me feel quite tense, and even in areas that I know very well, you know, that I've played before, I will still be like, well, you know, I know that the alien does follow certain rules, and you know, it's never going to cheat. It's only going to like do things when you can see it. It's not going to surprise, you know, it will only get you when you can see it, pretty much, you know, when it's made its presence known. But even so, I'm still tiptoeing here, tiptoeing there. And I'm thinking, what am I doing? But it's a terrific port, that Switch port. I will say that, like, the OG Switch didn't have the best of times with some of those sort of, but you know what? Isolation is a 360 PS3 game as well, and it's perfectly fine on those. So, yeah, it runs really great on Switch. But yeah, Isolation, that kind of feeling as like the first movie where like we know what that creature is, but your character doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
And you sort of quickly see that it is fast and it is lethal, and you know every instinct is to shoot at that thing and to hurt that thing and fend it off, but you know, you learn not to do that. I mean, in a very early, well, not very early, but during the development of Isolation, there were conversations about, like, should we be able to hurt it? You know, should we be able to kill it? And of course, it ultimately, no, the answer, you cannot, you know, spoilers, you know, you do get rid of that alien. But no, like, it went through very, very many conversations at Creative Assembly. And I think they made the right choice to kind of make it this unkillable, insta-kill beast, which, you know, you're then playing this kind of game of cat and mouse where you're the mouse, it's the cat, but also the save points are these, you know, it's sort of sometimes impossible beacons that you can't quite reach. And you know, that's another whole, the rhythm of that game is great as well, the way that you'll really, really feel it, and then it's like the game knows that you're going to go into this room, you'll go into a new space, and then there'll be a save point. And it's such a great relief when you see those lights come on, you know, dink, 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 saved. Oh, man, it's great. And, yeah, you know, it obviously left an impression, because some listeners will know this, but Fede Alvarez for Alien Romulus, those save points are in that movie. You know, if you watch that movie closely, well, if you watch that movie really closely, you'll see more than just those save points. But they are in there, yeah.
Excellent response. We could go on about that one, but we've got more questions. And personally, the Isolation stuff is why I love the fact that they use the same like pseudo future technology now. Like, why have they got CRT monitors? Why?
Yeah.
And is that the glow of those was your lighting in like
The team were obviously very, very, very strict about what their reference material was.
Yeah.
Everything had to be, you know, stuff that would have been in that first movie, right? So it couldn't have any iconography, any like equipment, any coloration from Aliens or Alien 3 or anything like that. So they would be working Creative Assembly with, you know, as many big studios do, with like contract artists and stuff, right? You know, you've got your core team, but you contract people in now. And like one of the guys in the game, he was telling me about, like, you know, they were working with this team of artists and they were getting stuff coming back in and it had like orange all over it. And like, it looked really cool, but he's like, there's no bloody orange in Alien. Like, you know, that doesn't look like that.
Bright, yeah, yeah. Beige.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That bright, dazzling beige or dark green glow. That was the two colour palette. That was, you know, Mother, the computer there, was this big sort of box with lights flashing on and off. You know, I mean, that was...
Isolation nails it. And you know, but I mean, that team, they'd wanted to make... So Creative Assembly, they'd wanted to make a space game before Isolation kind of fell into their laps a little bit. So they were already thinking of that kind of retro, futuristic, like, old tech. They were looking at it being like a... I can't remember the exact era, maybe 70s or something, like what if mankind had established a moon base in the 70s kind of thing. So very of that kind of, you know, retro future ilk. And their plan was like it was going to be like a contamination on the base, and they kind of referenced The Last of Us, but this would have been before The Last of Us was a thing, right? So you know, but yeah, one thing led to another. They got offered the Alien license to do something. It was that or the Olympics, and they chose Alien. And you can't really imagine the Olympics on the moon, but you know, stranger things have happened. And off they went. They turned that NASA, that moon demo, into an Alien demo and showed it to Sega. And Sega were like, yep, we will have some of that. I'm simplifying, but, you know, that's roughly where it went.
So the next question is, when researching this wonderful, did you ever find yourself discovering new things about a game you thought you knew a great deal about? You might have, you know, completed and played repeatedly. It might have even indeed inspired you to write the book in the first place. But even then, during your research, like, wait, I didn't know it did that. Anything, without giving too much away, is anything you think, wow, that's, didn't expect that?
I mean, not so much in terms of, in terms of like content of the game, certainly stuff about the making of and what they could have been before they became the final product. You know, games do change their styles throughout a process quite often. You know, Isolation was third person, went first person. Alien Resurrection was a top-down game for a while, then became third person, then became first person. You know, things change all the time. But I found out quite a lot about things that, you know, maybe I took for granted and hadn't thought before. Like, so Alien 3 on SNES, one of my favorite Alien games. If you die in that game, you hear the sample of Hudson from Aliens, where he says, game over, man. And you get a picture of the alien in that kind of orangey glow that Alien 3 has. And that section of the game actually is referenced in The Beach, you know, the book by Alex Garland. So like the character in that talks about like that being one of his favorite gaming memories. So that's something. But that sample was never cleared. So that exists in that game without Fox's approval. What Probe Software did was have two cartridges, one that they sent to Fox, here's our finished game, one that they sent to manufacturing that had the sample on it. So that's pretty cool. Tony Beckwith at Probe told me that and sort of mentioned about how it was, you know, kind of felt a bit like the Wild West back then, that you could get away with things. Obviously, they've really tightened down, like IP holders now, you know, you can't imagine that sort of thing ever happening. So things like that are fun. Finding out stuff that had never come out, you know, is obviously pretty interesting. So there's stuff in the book about Bosky Productions wanted to make a game, 3D Realms wanted to make a game. I touch upon Alien Crucible, which is the Obsidian Entertainment RPG that never happened. But in the middle of all that, wasn't really the middle of it, but in terms of like, so with later movies, there aren't really adaptations. You know, you've got the AVP Requiem, was that 2007? But, you know, the Alien Covenant game wasn't really Alien Covenant at all. It was the reskin of Aliens Armageddon. But you did get a VR experience, which is called In Utero, Alien Covenant In Utero. You can find it on Steam. It's free, I think, or you can just find it on YouTube and you can kind of look around in 360 degrees. And it lasts about 2 minutes. It's just a scene from that movie. It's the backburster scene, but you see it from the perspective of the alien. So it's pretty cool to do, you know, once and go, oh, I've done that. That's sweet. But I interviewed David Carlack, who directed that. I wanted to include it because it's on Steam. It's in that video game sphere. And he mentioned something I'd never heard of called the Dream Monitor. And this was some other VR title, other VR experience that he and Ridley Scott had dreamed up. And it was going to be like this thing that you sat in and you had a heart monitor. The headset would be like a face hugger. So it would have been like a thing you went to. Never heard of that before. Like there's some like vague, mysterious, misty mentions of something like that you can find online, but it had never been named before. And I did go back, like he said to me, he's like, oh, I'll see if I can get you anything more on that. Spoiler, he could not. I imagine as soon as he went to whoever he went to and said, oh, have you got any more on that? They probably said, no, do not talk to anyone about that. But it's in the book. It is mentioned. I would have loved to have found out if there's any like designs about it. I there's no more in the book than kind of a mention and what it would have been. But so like that stuff like that was always really, really fun to find out about. And also like just little things like how the concept of the Guardians, this like these humans that have got embryos in them in the game Dark Descent, Aliens Dark Descent, that their presence in that game was so interesting to Disney and Fox when the merger was happening that they kept it going because they shut other games down. And the person I spoke to about that game was like, pretty much like, it wasn't the aliens in the game that kept this going. It was like the fact that we had this, like this weird cult in the game that like was interesting to them. And it kind of expanded the universe a little bit more. So we nearly didn't get Dark Descent. And that's a really great game. The Tindalos Interactive kind of strategy game came out a few years ago. So yeah, hopefully, I mean, look, when people read through it, hopefully they'll find little stories, stuff they didn't know, you know, whether that's just like Lance Henriksen showing up with pizza during Colonial Marines and having a great time, or, you know, whether it's, I don't know. I don't know. There's a lot of words in it. There's lots of words.
All of them fascinating.
Oh, I'll tell you something else. Because I just thought of this now. The pickiness of Nintendo's QA process, whereby Jazz Austin, who programmed Alien 3 on Game Boy, where he wasn't the original programmer. He came back in because there was a mix-up, blah, 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 and he kind of got brought in like emergency style to do it. He'd done R-Type beforehand on Game Boy, which is a really, really great version of R-Type, but his background's in Spectrum. But he was he did these really cool, well, he didn't draw them, but like the game's got these really cool little like static cutscenes with like the characters in it, and they're really well picked out. Like that's Sigourney Weaver, that's Brian Glover, etc. Right? They look really good, and it's got Brian Glover's like Warden Andrews character in it, where he goes like, you know, rumor control. These are the facts in Alien 3 when they're trying to like let the people know what's going on. And then he gets savagely killed by an alien above him, but he kept submitting rumor control, right? To Nintendo, and they kept sending it back going, it's wrong. Well, he's British, isn't he? And rumors, spelt differently in America. Oh. So it was just quite fun. They're like, why does this keep coming back? Oh, I see. So Nintendo were that picky. Probe as well. Probe said the same thing when it came to the NES version of their Alien 3, the port. Like, that went through, quote, dozens of rounds of testing. you've got to earn that seal of approval somehow, haven't you?
Yeah, you certainly do. And we're not talking about the animal doing the ceiling.
No.
Although it's a great meme from 10 years ago. Now, next question. The structure of the book surprised me because rather than chronologically, you actually went with the games for each film. That's fine. That's another way of doing it. It's like, you know, High Fidelity, when it's like, well, how are you ordering your albums? Oh, autobiographical. Ooh. So, and similar with this book here, the Aliens of Video Games, is that you've actually gone with each film and just thrown chronologically the games that were made for that particular film. But how have you dealt with the expanded universe of Alien? Because, as we all know, the Alien franchise goes way beyond the films now. They got their own texts, their own books, comic books. I know I've read a fair few of the comic books as well. There's also role-playing games now and board games and all sorts. So how have you managed to wrangle that? How have you dealt with that?
I mean, as simply as possible, I suppose. So the reason for going movie to movie to movie to movie, or to movies, I suppose, because it goes Alien, Aliens, Alien 3, and then like more movie games, right? Because there's Resurrection, there's In Utero that I mentioned before, but not really much else. I thought that was easier for a kind of more, like if you were less into the games, but you liked the series, you like Aliens, right? And you knew the movies, maybe you'd want to go and check out what games were based on or spun out from certain movies. So, you know, Aliens does include Colonial Marines in its section. You know, that's not the story of that game, but it's, quote, you know, inverted commas, canon as to what happens after it or around it before Alien 3. You know, you got Hicks back, stop complaining, you know, this kind of thing. But yeah, I just literally just called Chapter 5 original Alien games, you know, like the other ones that don't fit anything else. You've got things like Thanatos Encounter in there. You've obviously got Dark Descent and Aliens Fireteam. Some bits like that. Like games like Alien Trilogy, I put in within the movie. I put Alien Trilogy in with Aliens because of the three films, it's a shoot 'em up. It's a first-person shooter, so it kind of fits Aliens more. But yeah, you got things like, I mean, I'm just thinking about other things like the original Alien games covers things like Aliens Online. It's got Aliens, the comic book adventure in it. Aliens Interactive, which was the CDI game that didn't come out. You've got Operation Aliens, which is a Tiger game, like an electronic game, right through to Aliens Roguelike, which is like a fan-made roguelike, funnily enough, but it uses this kind of like really like, it's just basically numbers and letters on a screen, right? It's very, very basic, very kind of like pet style, like super duper like early 80s old looking. Yeah, so just try to and put those together in a chronological order, so you know you'll see the years they were released in, as simple as that. Anything for, and wherever possible, like the cancelled games or the games that weren't released officially, you know, I kind of fit them in according to like when they were made or, you know, kind of when they hit the skids as best I can, because like reports can vary on those things.
All bases are covered, everyone. That's what I'm trying to get at.
I try to. So yeah, if you're looking for Alien Offworld Colony Simulator, you will find it in the original Aliens game section. All three people who know what I'm talking about are going to be very happy about that.
This question is more of a technical, like Marvel one. Out of all the platforms that the Alien games have arrived on or appeared on at some point, which surprised you in terms of its viability?
See, I didn't know that was coming next, but I did mention there Offworld Colony Simulator. That is a game that you played using your Alexa, and you kind of guided your way through a colony, as the name implies. And, you know, you can use kind of verbs to, you know, search, go, etc. You know, you could print out a little kind of information sheet to go with it. So that's kind of cool. Like, you know, that's obviously it's, you know, promoting that device and stuff. I'm pretty sure it was an Alien Day release. Yes, it was 2018.
Can you still play it? I can't remember.
No, it was unavailable. But you can find details of it online. You can find like YouTube videos and stuff. So definitely that, I suppose, in terms of something that's, you know, not really a gaming device, right? I'm quite impressed that you got like what is actually a quite rewarding alien shooter into a LCD Tiger device, Operation Aliens. Well, it, I was gonna say it didn't come out. There are copies floating around. It's not, it didn't like reach Woolworths or something like that. No. But there are copies that come up every now and again. And it is just like a corridor shooter where you're at the bottom, you're Drake, you know, from the movie, or from that kind of spin-off brand, Operation Aliens. So Operation Aliens was a weird one. It was like this kind of more cartoony look, like it kind of vaguely, well, more than vaguely, it tied into Kenner's toy line. You know, so you had these bright, colourful toy figures and all the aliens were like different types. Like there was a gorilla alien, a scorpion alien and a bull alien and all the rest of it. So they all come in, they all appear in this game. And you've got other marines that can like give you bonus weapons and stuff. So it's a pretty fun little game, you know, for one of those little tiger things. And so fair play. whoever put that together, because I didn't get very, very deep into that. What I did find, though, if that's now intrigued anyone listening, is that you can find a game that came out in 1997, again, made by Tiger, called Project Alien, basically the same game, but without the license. So I can only assume that Operation Aliens didn't come out because of a licensing situation, or that, like, you know, the powers that be were just like, this weird subline for kids where we've got stationery and lunchboxes and stuff is probably not the exact thing we want when, you know, these things tear through your chest and kill you. But, you know, we had worse things. We had Robocop toys. We had Terminator toys. It was all fine. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves toys. I mean, come on, and that is a horrific move.
Well, yes. Yes. Cursed soul. So next question. We've talked about this a lot. We keep going back to this particular film, and I want to talk about it further because Alien 3, you know, I haven't watched it maybe a handful of times, maybe if that. I just remember the corridor sequence where you're running along and then you go left and right and then right and left again. And it's quite terrifying. It's your, like, this first person sort of view of you running down these.
It's very video gamey, isn't it now? You didn't think about it at the time, but that first person viewpoint of the alien chasing after you. The prisoners is pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty. It's just a memorable sequence of it. But it's a lot of run and gun games. One of the better phrases. You've got a lot of run and gun treatment, as I've written in my question. And despite the film being based on, or trying to reprise the atmosphere from the original, because there was only one alien initially, I mean, there's a statute of limitations. I think we can spoil what happens, but and they're trying to reprise the pacing of the first film, I think. Although, you know, the director kind of walked away from it in the end because it's not delivering what I wanted to do. But just going back to this treatment of it, of the video games. Why do you think this was? I think I know why, but why do you think that the Alien 3 was treated in this way with lots of? Because I remember playing the Amiga game quite a lot. Didn't finish it. Didn't really gel with it. But why do you think it was being treated this way?
I think it comes just from a place of the developers. I mean, the teams at Probe realizing that they were being presented with a license for a movie in which there were no guns, right? In which there was no real way to combat an alien. You know, I think they say they've got some fire axes, some carving knives, that kind of thing. That doesn't make for a game, nor does one alien though, right? So, you know, all of the Alien 3 adaptations have more than one alien in them, and they all have guns of different kinds. When I spoke to Tony Beckwith, who's the producer on the SNES version of the game, he was telling me that they got the script through, as you know, was the case. Obviously, it's not filmed, and anyone who knows about Alien 3 knows it went through some significant changes, but they had, like, the script that they were working with. And he says, you know, there was a real problem with it. There were no weapons. He says he recalls the only weapon in the original script was a burning mop. Which I don't think actually appears in the end film, but they do identify that the alien is scared of fire. And there is a sequence with mops, and they're putting the kind of real flammable liquid down on the ground. So I assume there was maybe at some point meant to be this, you know, end of a mop on a stick, waving it around, trying to fend off an alien. But yeah, so they went back and forth with Fox, and Fox just went, you know what, go on. Put guns in it. We've got these, like, really cool guns from the movie before. You know, the pulse rifle is a pretty, even at that point, it's a pretty, I hate throwing the word iconic around, but it really is, you know, and even at that stage was this really cool, like, sci-fi enough firearm, you know. It was basically just like real guns taped together and stuff, wasn't it, with a bit of wood stuck over it or something. You know, they it wasn't that too different from what real soldiers, etc., would use. But yeah, so they went with that. And of course, then you go into Alien 3 on Amiga, which is the same, you know, it's a port of the Mega Drive version. So you've got grenade launcher, you've got grenades you can throw and drop, you've got a flamethrower, and you've got a pulse rifle. You do not have a flaming mop or a carving knife or a fire axe. More's the pity. But those aliens in that game, they do come at you quick. You know, you walk along or you run along with a kind of like leaning forward gait. I do love that game, but it's like you have to really kind of like memorize where everything is, because like you're quite close in on the screen, less so on the 8-bit versions, but the aliens appear from like nowhere. They just appear out of the floor, you know, which is a big cheat. You know, this is very kind of 8-bit, 16-bit development time where it's like, you know, we want to make this as hard as possible to kind of maximize the playtime, right? You know, you're going to have to die and start again and die and start again. So, like, there's some cheap aliens in that game. But, yeah, it would not have worked without guns, I don't think. I mean, so Joe Bonar, who worked on that game as well, like, he was saying that, like, you know, you need that signature firearm in that game. So they had to have it.
Yeah. Although I have to say, the end of Alien 3, the cleanup squad arrives and they have guns, but it's the last 10 minutes of the film, isn't it? Really?
They do. If only they'd got there sooner.
Probably not.
Well, they are in... So in Alien, you do meet them in Alien 3, the gun. I don't know if you've played through that. So that game ends with a fight against... I can't remember the name of him now. It's like Strange Man or Unnamed Stranger. It's Bishop from the end of the film, right?
Yeah.
Guy in a trench coat. And he rolls around and he fires back at you. And he's actually a little bit tricky because he moves really fast. And you kill this guy, Unidentified Man. Sorry, that's his name. Unidentified Man. So he's Michael Bishop. And so you kill him. But then, like, you just hear... you're finished, pal, after that. And then, like, all those guys, like, storm the building where you are that you see in the film and just, like, kill you. So, like, yeah, no happy ending to Alien 3 the gun either. You're just, like, dead. Never mind.
Well, next question then. We're rattling through. We're doing well. There's a lot of unreleased projects related. You do cover those, which you're very grateful for, because you could have gone... nope, nothing unreleased. If it's not released, then why are we talking about it? And I can see why you did this, why you did, because it gives the rest of the games, the ones that did made it, context. So out of all the unreleased games that you covered in the book, which one would you love to have seen the light of day of?
I think what Obsidian were working on for the game that was called Alien Crucible, so this is like middle noughties, is the one I would have liked to see the most. So... in terms of more recent things, you had the 3D Realms game, which was going to be a multiplayer game called Hadley's Hope, but not necessarily set at Hadley's Hope. And then the Boss Key Production games was being talked up as a game where you played as Newt, but older, and you had an android companion who was called Casey. Now, Casey was the name of her doll in the film, and I'm like, it's a bit too on the nose that for me, really. Like, I get that things could change, and it probably wouldn't have come out that way. And anyway. They were cancelled. But Obsidian's game, Crucible, you know, we had this kind of more of an RPG setup. You would go into missions, a bit like Commander Shepard in Mass Effect, where you'd have like two companions. You'd have this three kind of marine setup. You'd have to establish a colony, establish a base. You'd have to manage that base, protect it from aliens trying to get in. Sounds really cool. It kind of got shelved because they were also making Alpha Protocol. And Sega was like, well, we're only going to back one of these things. And the way I've read it and the way I've heard it is like Sega were really drifting away from the Alien project at that point. They were like kind of struggling to see how it was going to work as an RPG. I think if that was a few years later and Mass Effect had happened, they'd have gone, yeah, stick with it. Because like if you can do Mass Effect, but it's like got that horror edge or that kind of like, you know, that alienness to it in that world, that's something we haven't seen before. And we still haven't seen that. So that would have been a really, really cool project to come out. But agreed. It did not.
I do like Obsidian's.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, then, you know, their rep kind of speaks for itself and we still don't have that Alien RPG.
No, we kind of do, but it's not in video game form. Anyway.
exactly. Yeah, I will say I don't get into like board games and like things like that.
No, they've done two editions of it now. So anyway, yeah. That's
cool stuff there.
Yeah, it's good. It's really good. So... let's move on to the next one. This is what really struck me. Again, many things struck me about this game, this book. It's clearly a profound effect on me. But the amount of arcade games that were released based on the franchise, I was quite taken aback by this because I didn't think it really, as a franchise, would lend itself to arcades. Clearly, I'm wrong. But I thought, you know, yes, I get Star Wars. I get that. But Alien or Aliens? Maybe I'm wrong. But, you know, what's your take on this? Were you surprised by this? Were you like, oh, yeah, I can totally see this working? Just talk And almost give us some highlights about what your thoughts on what they did in terms of arcade games for Aliens.
I mean, Konami's Aliens, the 1990 games, that's coming out four years after Aliens, the movie. What's quite notable about the Alien series with games is that quite a few of them come out a ways after the film that they're ostensibly based on. You know, Resurrection. All right, Resurrection has its problems. It comes out in 2000, so 3 years after the movie. Alien on Spectrum comes out, and C64 and Amstrad comes out 5 years after the movie, right? You know, it's already a classic by that point, so they're not like worried about the kind of recognition or anything of it. But I think what that's lent the series, and I'll get into the arcades in a minute, is like, you know, there's a bit of pressure off, because it's kind of like now it's a game that has to, well, you could say pressure on. It doesn't have to time with the release of the movie. It just has to be a really cool game in and of itself. And a lot of developers I spoke to just like really loved being a part of like the Alien world. Like they were all like big fans of the series and they were like excited to work on an Alien game and stuff. Whereas I'm sure with some licenses, it's like, it's just a job, right? You need to get this out by whatever date and you move on to the next one. But didn't get a lot of that from speaking to devs in this book. But with the arcades, I mean, Aliens, you know, when you watch that film back, it's not as action-packed as maybe your memory holds. Like, you know, it's got specific scenes, you know, you're in the hive and then they're escaping medical and like, you know, when Ripley goes back down and meets the Queen and sets fire to all the eggs and all the rest of it, you know, there are those amazing sequences of action. But then, you know, there's a lot of like stillness and calm and quiet and tension building and mood building, which obviously has no place in the arcades. Get rid of that, which is why like Konami as like kind of like one of the masters of the kind of side scrolling beat 'em up shoot 'em up in the 80s and 90s, you know, it makes perfect sense that they would do like a really good, you know, 2D arcade shooter, which is exactly what they did, and it's a really fun game. It's got some into the screen bits, it's got some differences between the parts of the world it was released in. In Japan, certainly at the time, you couldn't depict children in danger. So if you play the American version of that game or the European version of that game, you'll see Newt, and like she gets captured by an alien, a flying alien, hilariously, love that, and taken away. But like, doesn't happen in the Japanese game. But terrific game, amazing side-scrolling arcade machine. You mentioned Mr. earlier on, but like, you know, there is no official release for that game. You have to find it in those grey area circles, shall we say. But it's well worth it, and it's two player as well, so you can play as a character called Hicks. I mean, he doesn't look like Hicks, and Ripley doesn't look like Ripley. Like, you know, they do not have the rights for their images in this game, which is why there's a very famous like bit of flyer art where like the Ripley of the game is this long blonde haired woman, which you know, you couldn't get much further away from what Ripley looks like in the movie. But then after that, you've got the Capcom Alien vs. Predator 1994. Again, Capcom at the absolute peak of their kind of belt scrolling powers at that point, right? You know, so amazing game again. You have the three player in the arcade, or you've got two player. If you play it at home on the Capcom Home Arcade, which as far as I know is still only the place you can legally play it at home. Amazing game. I love that game so much. When anyone asks me about like what my favorite game is from this book, I seem to say that a lot, even though it's like, it's just so, I just, you know, I'll play it start to finish, you know, 45 minutes, just have a blast. Love that game. But then you've got like the, you know, the shooters as well. You've got the Alien 3, the gun, like I said, and you've got Armageddon and you've got Extermination and just really cool light gun shooters. You know, you can still find Armageddon in loads of, you know, crappy seaside arcades these days where like, you know, 80% of it is given over to 2P machines and one-armed bandits and stuff. But there'll be like this Aliens Armageddon machine still there. Still plugging away with those, like, the guns are from a Terminator game before it, but it's just really good. I played through all of it at one of those, like, you know, the places you go and you pay your money up front, right? So you don't have to keep pumping your change in. They got one of those, I don't know how long it's been open for now, but I grew up just outside a place called Eastleigh in Hampshire, and they've got one of those there now, right by the train station, and they've got Aliens Armageddon in it. So you can just go in, pay your money, play through that whole game, have a really achy shoulder afterwards because those guns are big and heavy and you're constantly slapping the underside of it to reload. But yeah, it just works. Like for that pure adrenaline rush of like just mowing down these things, you know, like Hudson in Aliens before he's like taken from below, that kind of, that's the feeling it gives you, that, you know, come on, you want some? I'm not going to swear on this podcast, but you know, that kind of stuff. So it translates well from that capacity. You lose the horror and the fear, but you gain the the action side of it. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. And also there's the extended edition of Aliens, which did have those turret things.
Oh, the minigun section, mini the turret gun guns. Section. Yeah. I do love that, yeah. Well, that's great for pure tech. I mean, the first time I ever saw that version, and I was like, and you know, I'd already seen the movie, right? So, like, it can't change anything. That section, no one's going to die because they're in the next scene, right? Which you already know. But, you know, the way it's that classic, like, it's down to like 10 shots left or something. It's brilliant. Yeah. It's you know, so good. That kind of, I'm trying to think if we've really seen anything like that in an official game, and I don't think we have. So, but yeah, it'd be something cool to see. Like, again, maybe Obsidian's game would have had that with its kind of like base building and like survival elements. You know, you'd have to set up perimeter guns and stuff. You do it in Aliens Dark Descent, actually. You can set up sentries and things like that to protect your position. So that's kind of carried into games a bit.
It is, yeah. Okay. One thing we haven't mentioned, and I want to cover it because some listeners go, but what about, well, we're going to answer this. So there were also Alien versus Predator games. I remember playing the one on the PC for, you know, I loved that. I thought it was playing a different people, being the alien, being the predator, being the colonial marine. You know, they all had their strengths and weaknesses. I was so happy to see those games because you could have just said, yeah, these aren't really Aliens games. Just to skip on. Why would you do that? You actually play as an alien in one of them. Of course you'd include it, but you go one extra, don't you? You actually go in, look at the Predator games as well. What compelled you to go down that rabbit hole?
Well, the Predator games are only there in a little tiny bit. I think that's just purely because they're just a nice little tie-in. And Predator Concrete Jungle, the PS2 game, does actually have aliens in it. So I'm allowing myself that. And if I've got that in there already, then, you know, maybe I can include Predator 2. And of course, Predator 2, the film, famously had a xenomorph skull in it, blah, blah, blah. So it kind of made sense to tag on like a very, very short Predator chapter. Like it's maybe like 6 or 7 pages. It's not very long. But obviously the Aliens versus Predator games, the AVP games, I really wanted to get in there because I think, you know, to fans of the Alien series who enjoyed the video games as well, those are just as important. And you know, you've got some games in there like the Jaguar version of AVP, obviously the PC, the 1999 PC game, the Rebellion game that you mentioned there, incredible game. You know, people have really, really strong memories of, well, strong memories of that one, less so the Jaguar one for obvious like install based reasons. And then you've got things like the 2010 version of AVP, that Rebellion made game like had a bit of a resurgence like post Colonial Marines, where, you know, there was this disappointment in Colonial Marines. And I do like write quite a lot about Colonial Marines in the book, the 2013 game, what was ostensibly made by Gearbox, but was outsourced to various studios along the way. You know, not a train wreck, but not the game that people wanted. So people fell off of that and they went back to like, you know, what can I play that's a really cool alien game? And it's AVP 2010 and it's got Predators in it. So I wanted to include that. And then you get the weird stuff as well around movie licenses. Like there was quite a lot of movie licensed mobile games, you know, around the first Alien versus Predator film. There was a beat 'em up. There was like a weird kind of 2D maze game. There was a 3D game where you're going in through like the, you know, the kind of whaling station on the ice and you go down into the pyramid. There was a pachinko machine based on AVP. You know, there's all sorts. So it was just fun to dive into that and find out more about it. I played a version of AVP Requiem for the book, which is called Combat Evolved. You can find that online emulated. It's a flash game, which is basically Rampage, but you play as the alien or predator, like with massive bobbleheads. And, you know, it's exactly as dumb as it sounds, but a great little time killer. Like, you know, imagine that on your pre-smartphone, you know, well, on a flash or whatever, on a coffee break or something at work. And you just like play that for 10 minutes and set a high score and like eat a load of people out of their windows. Why is it happening? Don't question why. Although I suppose Requiem and AVP before it were set on Earth, so maybe it could have happened that way. Who knows? But really wanted to get the Predator games in there. I'm not a huge Predator guy at all. I did watch Predator, the first film, when I was far, far too young. In fact, before I'd seen any Aliens, and I thought it was very, very cool. But it's not a horror film. It's not a horror series, so it didn't stick with me in the same way. But yeah, just some really cool games there. And I did see, and maybe other people saw this as well, there was a game trailered just the other week called Alien Deathstorm, the most metal-sounding game of all time by Rebellion, and that really looks like Rebellion doing another AVP without the license. And I really hope that's the vibe of it. I know that Rebellion really wanted to do another AVP game post-2010. I know that they were having conversations about it. One of the Kingsleys was talking like it was going to happen, but obviously it never did. So it would be pretty cool if they just gone, you know what, stuff it. We'll make a game like those games, but it will just, you know, be an unlicensed, like, these aliens are legally distinct, and they are. You can see them in the trailer. They are, you know, they are not xenomorphs and they are not predators either, but they kind of have qualities that are a bit like them. It'll be an interesting one to keep an eye on. But yeah, Predators there, outside of the AVP games, not in any great, you know, capacity, but it did make me play Predator 2 on the Mars system again. And, you know, it's got a picture of my copy of it in there. So that's my game in the book.
Last question then. I know all good things come to an end, but here we are. And this is one that you might have to sort of skirt around, or maybe not, I don't know. Now, Alien, an Alien franchise and the universe has spawned many, many a thing. And we've just been covering the video games, of which there have been many. But can you think of another franchise that, you know, you could, or anyone else could do and delve into that needs more attention than it has to date?
I mean, when it comes to, like, series that have had a really long-running series of games and they've covered a lot of bases, my mind immediately goes to The Simpsons. Very different vibe, but so many games. You know, some great ones, some terrible ones. You know, a bit like how that series has been up and down over the years, mostly down in the last decade. But, you know, it's such a big franchise. It's such a big cultural phenomenon that it kind of maybe deserves that kind of look at those games. But after this book was done, a few months afterwards, I floated the idea to the same publisher of doing another book. And Simpsons was one of my suggestions. Transformers was another one of my suggestions. I'm a terrible Transformers nerd, so that would have tickled my particular preferences quite nicely. But the other one was Terminator. And I'll tell you when I would have said this, because it would probably have been just after I played 2D No Fate, right? The Bitmap Bureau game that came out. And loved that game. Thought it was really, really great. Loved the way that it kind of changed. And you had these alternative kind of timelines in it. And you could have all these different... It was just like a real love letter to that movie and to that kind of era of gaming as well. And obviously Bitmap Bureau are just an incredible team as well. You know, they have not missed yet. I will stand on my heel and say even Battle Axe is great. And I know that one gets some short shrift in some quarters, but I really like Battle Axe. And so, yeah, Terminator was an idea. None of them came to anything. And now I'm in a different kind of phase of my career where my day job is very all consuming and does present certain restrictions on what I can and can't do from a book point of view. I do have another book project on the go at the moment, which is very, very under wraps for now. But it is not, well, is it another series book? It kind of is, but not like this. But yeah, I mean, in terms of, I would be up for reading any of those books. Like if someone out there was like, I want to do the book on Simpsons games and Terminator games or Transformers games, and you do it and you get all the new interviews and you really dig into it, I'd love to read those books. Yeah. I mean, this is the thing when you get to a point where if you're actually pitching stuff, like most of the time you want to do it. And, you know, who knows, in the future, maybe, you know, there'll be opportunities. What I'm most keen to do, and it's really stupid that I say this, and every time I talk about this book, I always say this, but I would love to do an expanded version of this book, because we know that there are new games coming out, right? Like when we're recording this, it's a Friday, 24th of April, Alien Days in 2 days' time. There's going to be some new game information, right? We know Creative Assembly are making quote-unquote Alien Isolation 2. It's probably not called Alien Isolation 2. It's mentioned in the book. Like, I have some, like, kind of hypotheticals around it, or, like, you know, it's semi-informed guesses around it without going into any details, because I don't fancy taking on Sega's lawyers or anything. But, you know, there's stuff out there about that game, and there's stuff I know about that game, much like there's stuff about Rogue Incursion Part 2 that isn't in this book, that I would obviously love to put in another version of this book when those games are out or public knowledge sort of thing. But then there's also, I mentioned it before, like at the very top of this conversation, I mentioned about like Kant, you know, I haven't got Cosmic Hardball in there. Please look that game up. It's an American football game with aliens against predators. Just amazing. It was meant to be developed for the Genesis, for the Mega Drive in around about 1993. There is artwork out there for it. Just looks incredible. But in the process of like sort of promoting this book as well, and I, this sounds like a weird name drop, but it's sincere, it's genuine. I was talking to John Romero and he said, you didn't interview me for this book. And I had an Aliens project that I was making in like the late 80s when I was at, you know, studio before ID, before ID. I never know whether to say ID or ID. I usually go ID.
I think it's ID.
Yeah, I think it is ID, but I always check myself. So there's that game that, you know, we didn't know about. And then just the other day, I saw that there's this really cool Game Boy style sort of demo you can find on itch.io. I haven't written it down. I want to say it's called IOLAS. So IOLAUS. And that's like, you know, made by a tiny team. And you play it in your browser. And it's like a Game Boy styled AVP game. It's completely, you know, unofficial. But another one that I'd love to throw in the mix. So who knows? Who knows? If this book does enough, maybe in a couple of years time the publisher will say, hey, why don't you do that book again but stick another 15,000 words in it. Touch wood. I'd love to do that, but you know, let's see how it does first, because I'm not gonna be funny. Selling gaming books is hard. Some of mine have done well and some of them have done next to naff all, so let's see what this one does.
Indeed, hopefully we'll help along with that. I'm just thinking also the Simpsons and Transformers, they had some really good PS2 games.
They did. The Atari Transformers game is great. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, and then so you go good. Into the 360 era ones. There's Fall of Cybertron and War for Cybertron.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, that way around, which are the just these terrific, like, you know, you swap whether you're about Decepticon for different missions. Those are great. They're so well loved. And there's some really, like, bad ones from the 80s as well. But, like, again, just a really fun brand to dive into with a lot of history. I mean, the movie, so Transform, the animated movie, that's 40 years old this year. So like Hasbro are like whipping that up and they're, you know, I don't know what they're going to do, but presumably it will come back to cinemas at some point. So
yeah
there's obviously a lot of interest.
And of course, Simpsons Hit and Run.
Yes. Simpsons Hit and Run, there you go. I mean, yeah. I always go to Bart versus the Space Boons because that's probably the first one I played, but not the best one. But yeah, you've got those so many Game Boy games, and you've got like the, was it Krusty's Funhouse spin-off and so many others. It, again, a really, really kind of like core part of anyone's childhood if they're like, you know, through to their early 50s, really, I guess now, the Simpsons. You know, it's that old, right?
Kind of. I think more, yeah. I was in my 20s when I'd really gone to the Simpsons. So.
Yeah.
But Mike, it's been wonderful having you on. Thank you for being so open and honest about the creation of this incredible book about Aliens, the video games. There's a link below because we're on the YouTubes as well. Do click on that and pre-order at the time of releasing this. But it is out very, very soon. You can get it on PDF and get it on hard copy and all sorts.
It will be available digitally, yeah. It will be available in the US as well for US listeners. I do get asked that, is it going to come to the US? And it is.
Yep.
It might be a few months after the release in Europe, but that's the way these things work.
We'll have to remove a few U's from the...
Yeah, well, no, goodness no.
And a few
no.
Zs.
And... Do you know what? That's a genuine thing I do check with a publisher. Am I writing this in English, in British English or American English?
American English.
Because in my job, I have to write, and I've done this in previous jobs, I've had to write in American English. So it's quite, you have to kind of rewire your brain a bit when you sit down on the weekend for the book work. Just remember to put my U's in, yeah, and take the Z's out. So it's always a fun time.
So, yeah, again, well, congratulations on completing it. I know it's a while back since you have done, but it's no mean feat completing any project, any creative endeavor. It's the last 10% is genuinely the hardest, and people don't people. It's a cliche because it's true. That last polishing bit and you rereading it over and over again to the point where you don't even see the words anymore.
And they stop making sense. They do, yeah.
They really do. So
I just hope that for this one, like, it doesn't come out and in like the first hours of receiving it, I see a typo, because that has happened before. You know, however many times you check it, or an editor checks it, or a proofreader checks it, there's always that chance.
I have found the larger the font, the larger the lettering, the easier it is for a typo to arrive. It sounds bizarre, but the larger the font, you just, because you're not, you're just looking at it as an image then. You're not looking at it as a word.
Yeah. You're seeing the start and the end, and you're missing the middle a lot of the time. Yeah,
exactly. 100%. Just like, hang on, you've got two L's there or something like that. Oh, no. So, you know, it's just, it's hard. But no, again, thank you for your efforts. Thank you for making this. It's an extraordinary thing. I found out. So I didn't know, full confession, didn't know there are alien games. I thought it was just from Aliens and onwards.
No.
No, yeah, there were Alien, because I thought that film does not lend itself to video games. Clearly, I was wrong.
Well, we barely touched upon the Atari version, but I mean, that is not an Alien game. But I'll leave listeners with this. The Atari 2600 VCS version of Alien is a maze game. It's a really good, fun maze game. It's not an Alien game. It's completely silly. Don't think of it as an Alien game. It's just a fun, silly sci-fi maze game. Just go with that. Indeed. It'd be fine.
Fantastic sign-off. Thank you, Mike. And thank you, listeners. We'll see you next time. Until then, bye.
Bye.